79-year-old Harriet Chance gets an unexpected phone call one day. A travel agency wants to know if she's going to use the Alaska cruise her late husband Bernard bought for her. This is the first time Chance has heard about the cruise. That mystery phone call marks the beginning of Bainbridge Island writer Jonathan Evason's fourth novel. It's called This Is Your Life, Harriet Chance. Ross Reynolds asked Evason to describe his protagonist, Harriet Chance.
I like to think of Harriet as kind of a postmodern everywoman. My mother is pretty much the exact age of Harriet, so like I sort of know her habits. I know how she thinks. It's not based on her experiences at all, but I mean, definitely just knowing my mom as well as I do. I'm a total mama's boy. I was raised by women. Yeah, she's just an amalgamation of all these women in my life.
It's interesting you call her postmodern because, as I read it, she's born in 1936. She strikes me as very much a woman of that era.
Absolutely.
Kind of pre-second wave feminism.
Right. I think it's my treatment of her that's maybe postmodern more than her herself. Yeah, she's definitely, I conceived of the book as sort of a love story to the women of the, you know, quote, greatest generation. Because here you have this, my characters tend to be people who are marginalized in some way by society. And I thought, you know, who is more marginalized than 80-year-old women? Here they've probably got more disposable income than anybody, but nobody markets toward them anymore. Nobody, besides, you know, the medical industry, nobody programs toward them. They're basically just sort of ignored, and yet they're so fascinating, and there's just so much experience and so much knowledge there that I don't feel like people write about elderly protagonists nearly enough.
Can you think of something in real life from your mother or your grandmother that you refracted through your fiction and to bring to the novel?
Not that I want to talk about.
Okay.
I still got to sit at the table at Thanksgiving with these people.
Well, they're going to know.
Well, you know, okay, I'll say, you know, this is true of a lot of the mother-daughter relationships, not just in my family, but in my extended family and friends that I've noticed a few themes. The mother-daughter relationships, many of the ones I've observed, are very, very close, but very sort of tense, like two parties involved are a lot more alike than they're willing to admit.
You know, as I was reading it, I felt very sorry for Harriet. I mean, she'd hoped to be a lawyer. She ended up getting pregnant. That really didn't happen the way she wanted it to. On this cruise that takes place through most of the book, she has these startling revelations that big chunks of her life, her marriage, her friendships were just lies. And it seemed very sad to me. Did you intend it that way?
Yes. I mean, I feel like it was time for Harriet to have a reckoning. You know, I mean, she'd basically, you know, for five decades, she was Mrs. Bernard Chance. You know, she voted how Bernard voted. She ate what Bernard wanted to eat. She learned to want out of life what Bernard did, as I saw so many women of that generation do, my mother included. You know, my mother wanted to be an art history major and do all these things, but then she got pregnant, and pretty soon, you know, she had five kids. And so, you know, she set her dreams on the back burner very early on.
Why did you choose an Alaska cruise for kind of the setting for the contemporary aspect of this novel?
Well, you know, part of it is just because I wanted to take a cruise. I kind of have my life imitate my art sometimes. I just wanted to take my family on a cruise, but also this idea of the inside passage. You see what I did there? It's an inside passage tour, and that's what Harriet is essentially doing, is having an inside passage. And there's something sort of cold and vast about the Yukon territory. I felt like that worked. Harriet is at such a late season in her life, you know, receding like a glacier, I guess, kind of thing.
Tell me a little bit about, you live here, of course, so naturally you'd be drawing from things in your life, but how does the setting in Western Washington kind of play into the story that you're telling?
Well, about 4 years ago, I bought a second home over in Squim. It's a kind of a cabin up in the hills there, and Squim, essentially being in the rain shadow, is a very, I mean, one side of it is really very much a working class town. And then the other side of it down in the flats of Carlsberg is like a gigantic, you know, retirement community. I mean, you know, every other storefront is some sort of medical specialist. And there's many, you know, many assisted living facilities. And so the culture of Squim is very much, you know, geared towards retirement. So I'm around it a lot.
In Harriet's mind, her husband's mind, certainly, it's an idealized place to go from Seattle because you're in the rain shadow all of a sudden and it's sunny all the time.
He hates rust because, you know, he manufactured ball bearings for 40 years, and, like, you know, rust is the enemy. So that was the big selling point, was 18 inches of rain annually. For me, writing fiction is just an exercise in empathy. It's about me getting out of my own way and really having the opportunity to walk a mile in someone else's shoes. In this case, a 78-year-old woman, something I'm never going to be. When I talk about the reader, I'm talking about this idealized, it's basically me. Not some demo. I don't want to think about the reader. I use lots of beta readers, and I listen to their feedback. It helps inform me.
Can you give me an example of one of your beta readers for the new book and how they might have led you to adjust something or change something?
Well, my friend Maria Semple was huge. Maria and I have, you know, read each other's books in manuscript form for a couple books now, and you know, the early drafts of this book were sort of you know, stultifyingly linear. Maria just helped encourage me to just bust out a little bit and just kind of, you know, just let myself take over a little bit, not you know, my own authorial performance a little bit. And yeah, she was hugely helpful. And it, you know, we both have books that had ships in them too, so.
Well, the narrative ping-pongs around from her birth to her death and everything in between. It jumps forward and backwards decades. How did you kind of sit back and go, this is going to make sense? They'll be able to make sense of this, to make those connections when something's jumping so radically in time.
Okay, so this is kind of ties into what I was saying about Maria's read of the book, was that the early drafts of the book were so linear. And so I tried to get at Harriet's character from the outside in, you know, and I'm always looking at my mom's life and I'm going, Mom, why don't you come over and see the kids today? And she goes, well, I got to wash my hair. I'm like, well, after? You know what I mean? It's just like her life has become so small. And so, you know, I was painting this portrait of Harriet from the outside in, where, you know, Harriet pads to the kitchen and puts on some tea and then, you know, watches it steep and looks out the window, you know, chapter two. You know, nothing was, it was at that point that I realized, you know, this is a book about memory and reflection. And memory and reflection are very nonlinear. You know what I mean? They have triggers. So it made a lot of sense for, you know, when I was working through the book in the later drafts, the material doesn't come out of nowhere. It's not like I'm just arbitrarily picking moments. There's always a trigger in real time that gets Harriet thinking about these specific things. So as a writer, it really allowed me to organize basically the same information, which was in this really boring first draft, and break it up in a way that was exciting and really was more of a dance with the reader. Because, like, for me, you know, the reader's the best tool in my belt. Like, the reader's got to do everything I got to do backwards and heels. So, like, I started to just think about the reader more and, like, how I presented this information. How could I do this in a compelling way? And it worked perfectly with, you know, non-linearity worked perfect because this is how the reflective mind works.
I got to ask you about your last book, which, is, as you mentioned, is being made into a film starring Paul Rudd. And I've always been told that novelists who get their books made into films are just headed for disappointment if they try to hold on to it at all, because it will be changed and altered and you're not going to like it. What's been the experience for you?
Very hands-off. I mean, they've been wonderful all along the way. I mean, the dictates for a 300-page novel and a two-hour film are so different. How could they ever expect to do justice? It's going to be different. I wasn't going to be the precious artist that was like, oh, it wasn't that way. And I was going to just buy a hot tub, put a deck. You know what I mean? I was just, it's all gravy. It's like I made money for not doing anything. That never happens. And who doesn't want to have Paul Rudd ostensibly playing themselves, right? I mean, he's better looking, funnier. Everybody loves that guy. Women, men, dogs, children. So, I mean, I have to be thrilled like that. Nothing against Paul Giamatti, but you know what I mean? It's like I'd rather have hunky Paul Rudd. It's supposed to be me.
Bainbridge Island writer Jonathan Evason on the movie adaptation of his last novel, The Revised Fundamentals of Caregiving. Evason's latest novel is also set in the Pacific Northwest. It's called This Is Your Life, Harriet Chance. The book goes on sale today. Jonathan Evason spoke with Ross Reynolds.